Here it is, folks, the moment you've all been waiting for, the Oscar recap from the Awards Blend co-hosts. Greeting and welcome to Awards Blend number 11, the one where we're all kind of exhausted because we've covered the actual Academy Awards ceremony. Then we worked full days where we talked about the ceremony, and then we got on a podcast late at night to talk about the ceremony some more. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing director here at Cinema Blend. And as always, I am joined by my great friends and podcast co-hosts, starting with Jake Hamilton, the entertainment reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago.
Good evening, sir. How are you, my friend?
I am well. I'm tired. I'm ready to put the final nail in this coffin. But we
There's
also
a certain
need...
element of like when the Oscars happen, that you're just like, oh, I'm over it.
Well, and we'll get into that, too, because I think it's really funny that you said some people came up to you and you're like, what, didn't the Oscars already happen? And you were like, no, I know it's March, but while we were lounging around our apartments, Kevin McCarthy was flying across the country to head to Los Angeles because he wasn't tired enough talking about the Oscars. Kevin McCarthy is the entertainment reporter for Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. and the co-host of Awards Blend. Kevin, how are you, sir?
No, good to see you guys. Great to be on. I got a lot to say about the show last night, so I'm excited to kind of break it down with you guys and see where our heads are at. I know via our text chain, Jake and I are, I think we're more on the same wavelength about the show itself and versus where you were. So I'm interested to have that conversation. So
well, let's get right to it. We are going to talk about the 90th Academy Awards hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. We will get to some of the winners. And right off the bat, I want to get an overall grade for the show. Kevin, what is your grade for the show?
What's our scale?
A through F.
C minus.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say C minus.
Yeah, not. I didn't. Like, we can get into more details, but yeah, where are you at on this, Sean?
I'm at a B plus. I like the show a lot more than you two did. Yes, I really did. I think that it had all of the things that I normally dislike about the show. It's super long. They waste time on categories that I know are important, but that I'm not all that interested in. There's an hour of stuff in the middle that you could get rid of. I'd say that every single year. But in general, I thought the montages to the history of cinema were fantastic.
The 90th montage was probably that one was of great. The best they've ever produced.
But I also really liked the ones that they did before each category. I thought that those were really good.
I like those. It was nice seeing the old winners.
I thought it was a little heavy on video. I thought it was filling a lot of time. And I thought it was, first of all, you guys know me. I am a big technical guy. I am all for the sound design stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I fully understand that people don't want to sit through an hour of that. On the other side of that, I understand giving those people their moments. They're not actors. They're not on camera. They're not celebrated the way actors are in regards to kind of getting their moment to shine. So I totally get that part of it. But if I'm a producer of that show, I'm also thinking about what are the general audiences want to hear? What's best for ratings? And I think that that whole category of time between supporting actor and then supporting actress, wherever whatever is filled in there with sound design, sound editing, sound mixing, production design, art direction, those to me need to be things that you hear about when you go to break. So you know, we're getting ready to go to break. Sound design was just given to Dunkirk, and we'll be right back with more coming up soon. And I think that maybe the Academy
cut out all the below the line stuff, because I was thinking to cut out the shorts. So that cuts out two. I was thinking, as horrible as this is, but I only say this because every year it only ticks off people because they leave people out. You cut out In Memoriam. Yeah. It always brings the show down, and all it does is tick people off.
I agree.
Now,
below the line, I'm not saying to get rid of like screenplay. Like screenplay, cinematography, adapted screenplay, original screenplay. Director,
screenplay I would consider one of the major ones, but like cinematography, I would consider a technical below the line.
When you start
picking and choosing. No, I think this year it was a big deal because of Deakins, but on a normal year, cinematography is treated about as importantly as sound mixing or sound editing.
But cinematography is the visual of the movie. It's like it's and I understand sound is the sound, but it's like I don't know that whole. section of sound design, sound mixing, it's just not conducive to a show that people are going to want to stick with. You know what I mean? It's just not.
I agree with you.
I don't know.
I agree with you. It does start getting tricky when you start
right.
trying to decide, okay, well, which ones do you cut out to make it faster?
Well, let me ask you this. When did you guys start losing interest in the telecast last night? Specifically 20 last minutes night. In. Were you guys really?
After Rockwell won. Or no, wait, take it back. Kimmel's monologue?
Yep.
Wow, that soon?
Yeah, the monologue wasn't good. The beginning of the show was bad. That black and white thing he did was really bad.
I did like that. I will say I didn't like that. I like the Emma Stone bit, like, well, she do it again. No.
I didn't like that.
I thought that was great.
I thought the show was just...
I just couldn't get into it.
Too political? Was the monologue too political?
He didn't blend it well. Because I don't like when people say, well, Kimmel's monologue, like, he had to be careful because he had to try to blend comedy and politics. I don't agree with that because I thought Seth Meyers did it brilliantly with the Golden Gloves. To me, Seth Meyers is the MVP of awards season host. I thought he was the first one out of the barrel that had to somehow tackle both comedy and what was going on in Hollywood and around the country. And he did it in such an amazing way and kept the bit going. I felt like I was watching not just an episode of Kimmel's show,
but
a bad episode of Kimmel's show.
That's a great point. It felt like the opening monologue of his show, which is not a bad thing. It's just bad in that setting. Like, and it wasn't even a great opening monologue, as Jake just said. Totally felt the same way. So underwhelmed. I can't remember a single joke he made.
The jet ski bit was terrible, lame.
I thought that was so dumb, and I like the idea of keeping a continuous thread throughout the show, and there are funny ways to do that, but a jet ski was like, it just didn't feel right, it didn't make sense to me.
It cheapened the show.
I completely agree with you. Also, I mean, I just, at 8:40, I looked over at Lauren, I said, there is still 3 hours left in this show.
It's a death sentence, it really is.
And I am admittedly one of the biggest movie fans on the planet. The Oscars are my Super Bowl. So same thing for both of you guys. The fact that I felt that way at that point in the show, I was very underwhelmed. I miss the Billy Crystal openings, the Hugh Jackman openings. I miss the over-the-top.
I miss Ellen.
Ellen was my favorite in recent years. Ellen was so good.
I agree.
But it doesn't – there's a lot of things that need to be fixed with the show, obviously. And I think it starts with – and this is a problem that they're going to face every single year. This crop of films, I just don't think the general audience was excited about it. So we got to – let's talk about the ratings really fast. Jake and I were looking at these before the podcast started, but this was a all-time low, complete bottom of the barrel, 26.5 million total viewers. This is down.
I mean, we've been saying that over the course of this entire podcast. I feel like we've been talking about this.
It's also been too long. And Jake just made a good, like the point you guys made earlier about the Oscars already happening. Like, I honestly was like, why are we waiting till March 4th? Why is there a month in between? This is all dying down. Like, people are just kind of moving on with their lives.
We're so far into Black Panther and its run. And it's like, it was very exciting to see the cast members from Black Panther. And I think most of the social memes from the red carpet last night were Black Panther cast members doing the Wakanda Forever. It's because we've all mentally moved into 2018. We're ready for the 100%. Next. Okay, so was this a perfect storm of the telecast being too late in the game and us being tired of these films, the films not being that great? And I want to throw one other point out at you guys. The Oscars used to be the only time that you saw these celebrities. Like, it was a highlight to see Nicholson and Denzel and Meryl Streep, and you would tune in because you'd be like, look, this is everybody. And nowadays, because of all of the outlets that have to be served, we see these people constantly. Like, to see Lupita Nyong'o come out, how many people did Kumail Nanjiani talk to over the course of promoting The Big Sick? These guys were everywhere. There's nothing really special about, like, some of the presenters. I thought it was great to see Jane Fonda and even Helen Mirren and people like that. It was like, oh, this is really, this is exciting. Eva Marie Saint, the Eva Marie Saint appearance was unbelievable. Yeah, that was that was really cool.
That was cool.
But most of the presenters are people that we see on a weekly basis now at this point. Do you think that hurts?
Yeah, I think, and not just that, not just talking about, like, you know, obviously they all do a lot of press, and so there's a lot of different outlets. No matter what outlet you're watching, chances are you're going to see an interview for the Big Sick. But with now more streaming outlets, so many more actors and talent are a lot more in the forefront. Then it used to be like, oh my God, like, what, you know, like you said, Nicholson's in the front row. We haven't seen Nicholson in a few years. Look, he looks fantastic. Right. Oh, that's so cool to see him. But now it's like, you know, Jane Fonda has a show on Netflix. Like, I could see her in a new show right now if I want. It used to be like, oh, Jane Fonda hasn't been in a movie in 15 years. No, she has a streaming television series if we really want to see her. There are also so many different award shows. Like, okay, like, yeah, like, maybe we haven't, maybe someone hasn't made a movie in 20 years and maybe they don't have a Netflix series, but they were just walking the red carpet 2 weeks ago for the SAG. And before that, they were walking the red carpet 2 weeks ago for Golden Globes. Like, I get that
the general audience doesn't watch all of those. We do.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I think a lot of them used to reserve the Oscars as being like, that's the one I'm going to pay attention to.
Well,
and people don't anymore.
Yeah. Oversaturation is definitely a big part of it. I think politics is probably the biggest reason for the ratings, personally. I think it's that and then the movies themselves. And what I mean by that is, you know, this year there were two films that had, I guess, quote-unquote blockbuster status, which were Get Out and Dunkirk. Get Out was the most profitable film of 2017. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but it was cost $4.5 million to make, and it made over $250 million worldwide. I don't know if that stat's right, but... and then Dunkirk made like $500 million or something, whatever the worldwide total was for that. So those were films that represented the audiences, I thought. The other seven, I will say Shape of Water actually was the highest grossing Best Picture winner in 5 years. It's made $130 million
worldwide. Which is astounding to me.
Yeah, which is actually pretty, you know, pretty good. It only cost $19 million to make. So that did well. I'll tell you right now, comes down to a simple conversation I had on Saturday morning. I was with Lauren, and I was with a friend of ours, and Lauren and I were talking about how excited we were for the Academy Awards, and I looked it over at my friend, and I'm like, you're excited, aren't you? She's like, I'm not watching this year. I'm like, why? She goes, it's called all the politics. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, first of all, like, I've never even, like, thought about, like, not being excited for this show. Growing up, politics. I feel like politics weren't as heavy-handed as they were back then. And specifically with Kimmel, he has his show is, you know, he's very, very vocal about his feelings on President Trump. So that audience is not watching, and that's a lot of people. So that's it comes down to that now. I mean, I've seen so many comments on my Twitter feed when I post about the show. And all they ever say is, I'm not watching. I don't want to hear. And again, I want to make it clear that I'm not saying I'm politically aligned with anybody. I'm just talking about the idea that Kimmel has struck this chord with the country, with part of the country that, you know, that's supporting President Trump. And they're not watching the Oscars because they don't want to hear him talk about that.
What I found interesting is that people keep saying that, oh, I'm not watching because the politics. I'm not watching because of the liberal slant against, you know, the president one way or the other. I would argue that this is one of the least political years for the award season. Yes, the Me Too and Time's Up social movement dominated the conversation, but that's not politics. That is a social movement. That is the world is changing kind of thing. I'd actually argue that there weren't a lot of Trump jabs in any of the monologues over the course of this award season. So, ironically, the year in which I heard the most, I'm not watching because of politics, because I agree with you, Kevin. That's all I saw on social media was, I'm not watching because of politics. This was the least political year ever. I think people confuse a social movement for a political movement.
That's funny Jake said, because that is the truth. Like, last night's show was actually less political than I think anybody expected it to be. But because of Kimmel's show every night and what he does with whatever he does on his show politically, it's turned off that half of the country. So what's happening is, last year's Oscars were the second lowest rated Oscars since 1974 when Nielsen started tracking these things. Going into this year, why would anybody who doesn't like what he's saying tune in to watch him host an Oscar show. That's so fair. It's, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence came out recently and actually made a point where she said that celebrities, and I could be, I don't want to misquote her, but it was, I read it online, but so if I'm paraphrasing, I apologize. Something along the lines of celebrities need to keep this separate from politics because we're going to be, they're hurting the business is what she was saying. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with her, but she was saying it's hurting the business because we're turning off essentially half the audience.
But there's also this, we're not the only example, this industry. I mean, I can point to people who have bailed on the NFL because for political reasons, for protests with the national anthem. There are people I know who have just stopped watching football altogether.
Yep. NFL ratings are down. Oh, it's happening everywhere. Politics are
everywhere. I find, though, a certain irony when someone expresses an opinion on social media saying that someone should not express their opinion. So, like, essentially, like... Right. I'm going to give my opinion, and you should listen to me, but I'm going to give an opinion saying that someone else shouldn't give their opinion, and you shouldn't listen to them. Like, in order for you to express your displeasure, you have to do exactly what you're criticizing them for doing. So anytime someone tells me, oh, like, I celebrities should not talk about politics, and I always think, like, well, then, like, so should none of us talk about politics then? Like, yes, they have a bigger stage, and their microphone goes a little bit further than the rest of ours, but, like, everyone has a right to have an opinion, and it's their moment. If they want to, they earn that 30 seconds on the stage, and if they want to take their pants off and run around doing the chicken dance, that's their right to do it.
When you have that platform, I agree. I agree that you have the right to say what you want to say. But when an Oscar telecast is happening, and this is politics aside, I want to watch a show that celebrates the movies and the films and the production. And, you know, Me Too and Time's Up, I don't blend that in with politics. I'm perfectly fine with that being a part of the show because that has to be changed. And that's a very important time. And I think that I thought last night they did it in a very, very nice way. It was controlled. It was very well done last night with the Me Too and the Time's Up element of the show. I think the politics of it, I mean, you bring up a great point, Sean. NFL ratings are down too. I mean, it's gotten to a point now where people are not watching things because of any type of political change that the host or the environment may have against their beliefs. So it's actually scary, kind of that what's happening in regards to how people are just tuning out. It's kind of weird.
Let's get to the film, to the films themselves, and the film specifically that won. I want to talk about The Shape of Water because I'm truthfully ecstatic that this film won.
Ecstatic? You're ecstatic?
I am. Jake, I loved this movie. I know you didn't. And it's number three for me.
It doesn't bother me that it won, but I feel like I met a lot of people that liked the movie, but I feel like I didn't meet a ton of people that I would say were ecstatic that it won.
Well, for this reason. I really do think it's a beautiful love story. I think it's a extremely well-made film. I think Del Toro is one of those filmmakers that we should continue to celebrate because he makes the type of films that he wants to make and does not compromise. He has a very original voice to the point where a lot of times he goes a little bit too far off the rails for me, and I tend to lose a little bit of interest in what he's doing because he gets a little bit too strange. But what I want to ask you guys specifically from this point of view is, does Shape of Water winning last night change what the definition of an Oscar movie is? Because I think in years past, the easy default win last night would have been Darkest Hour or Dunkirk. And everybody was holding out hopes that Get Out would win because it was a genre movie and a horror movie. But Shape of Water, if you go back and pop it in and just start watching it now, knowing that it's the Best Picture winner, it is a strange freaking movie.
I don't think Dunkirk is a typical Oscar film. I mean, I think the subject matter might be, but
a historical white, movie is that usually appeals to the older Academy members who's like, I remember World War II. I'm going to vote for that movie because that's the one that appeals to me. So
to me, the second I was watching Shape of Water and saw that one, they live above a movie theater. And two, there's the scene where he's standing, the creature standing in the middle of the movie theater in awe of what he's seeing on screen. Right. And there's the sequence. It's obviously a tip of the hat, if not a shot-for-shot remake of an old Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers dance, black and white dance sequence.
Such a beautiful scene.
It is a beautiful scene. I'm not knocking the scene, but at the end of the day, Hollywood loves movie. And this is such a cliche at this point, but they love movies where movies essentially say, aren't movies great? And yes, this one was a bit different on the spectrum of what constitutes what normally fits into Best Picture, but it was still in the ballpark. I mean, normally the movies that win Best Picture, they're maybe playing first, second, or third base, and maybe this one is out in left field, but it's still playing the game, and it's still right in the same ballpark. It's still a movie about how great movies are, and at the end of the day, that's why, to me, it's still just another Oscar movie. That's why I wanted Get Out to win.
That's a component of the film, but until you brought up those points, when I think of Shape of Water, those aren't the things I think about. I think of Richard Jenkins and his, you know, quiet love affair with the guy who's serving them those key lime pies. Or I think of the love affair between Sally Hawkins and the creature. You're right. There's definitely those film aspects of it. But I wonder how much of an influence. I'm not putting this on the level of The Artist, where just right, because it was about Hollywood, you know, that they just, the Academy members slavishly voted for it. I think that that they had to really push hard for it.
I think Natalie Imbruglia wrote a song about my feelings of this whole thing, which is I'm torn. Like, I'm like genuinely torn.
Here's why. Been waiting the entire award season to use that line.
I'm waiting to use that.
Well played.
But what I was trying to say was, it's funny to me because Shape of Water it's both of what we're talking about here. It is the typical Oscar film, but then it's not. And everything Jake just said is exactly why I think it is the typical Oscar film. And then everything Sean just said about like the creature element of it. It is a very strange movie, but there are a lot of tropes of things that the Academy does like to award. So for me, it's almost like, okay, I don't think it's the best movie of 2017. I'm happy that it won over three billboards. I'm happy that it won over Darkest Hour. I'm happy that it won over other films as well. And
The Post.
It's better than The Post. But
get him, Sean.
Get him, Grandpa.
I lost that fight a long time ago. I lost it. People didn't warm up to that movie as much as
they. Sean and I were the only two people waving the flag on the Post Island like the dude in Les Mis. We were just like waving our Spielberg flag.
Okay, give me a minute on The Post, because I cannot comprehend how that movie didn't tick every box for the Academy.
It's not,
because
it's not
this wasn't a political
great
year.
It's also not great, though. It's good.
How many not great movies get celebrated, though? Yeah. There's a ton of not great movies that get celebrated.
There was something missing in The Post. There was something there. It just felt like it was trying to be the Oscar film this year. I hate saying that, and I love Spielberg, and I actually really enjoyed The Post. I gave it a good review. I just don't think it was on a level of greatness. I don't think that it didn't do anything for me. That I've kept with me.
It was attempting to tap into a moment that wasn't happening at the time. When we heard this movie was being made, we're like, oh my god, how timely and topical about the press fighting with the president. Right. But when the movie came out, we were in the midst of not that, but I mean, going back to it wasn't a political moment at the time. It was the Me Too and the Time's Up movement. So when the movie came out, it didn't feel quite like it had its finger on the pulse, like if it had come out maybe 6 months before, or if the Me Too movement hadn't happened yet, we would still be talking a little bit more politics and the press battling. I just don't think that it was reflecting what really was going, or at least what was at the forefront of our social conscious at the moment.
Okay, when we started this podcast, we played a game where we looked back at Best Picture winners for the past 10 years and we voted people out, right?
Yep.
10 years from now, when we look back at this year, is Shape of Water a movie you're going to want to vote out?
Yep.
Probably. And here's the thing. I think The Shape of Water is a great movie. It was on my top five of 2017. It was beautifully executed, beautifully shot.
Top five? You would vote out a top five movie for you? No.
No.
Don't vote that out then.
No, but you're saying the winner.
There's also not a movie that I care that much about that was nominated that I'm like, oh, like that should have. There's not like a Social Network for me where I'm like, this is a movie we're going to be talking about in 20 years. None of the non-movie nominated do I.
I think Get Out.
Okay, maybe
on
Get
that
Out.
Level.
Okay, Get Out. Okay, okay, yeah. Okay, all right.
Okay, that, okay. Let me ask it that way then. Are you guys angry that it lost to Get Out?
Yes.
Yes.
Interesting. Interesting.
Get Out's a better movie.
Because I like what Get Out says about the moment we're in right now. And right. Also, I like what Get Out would have said about the Academy. It would have said that we're moving in a much more interesting direction,
right?
In terms of what they're willing to take a chance on.
I completely agree.
As opposed what them giving it to Shape of Water, which to me in with it.
But okay. So let's talk about that just briefly, because I think incrementally they're making some big change. They are making big changes, but it's like trying to take a cruise ship and make a hard left turn, right? Like it's very hard to do. But Jordan's screenplay win is a huge step for a picture that I don't think would have even been in the Oscar conversation 2 years ago, 3 years ago. The presentations last night, the pairings of the presentations last night, I thought were fantastic. And what I wanted to say a little bit earlier, though, I don't want to, really dwell into the politics of the message, but people who didn't tune into the Oscar telecast last night missed out on amazing messages of, Del Toro saying, like, this is the door and it's open now, come in and tell your story. And there was an amazing commercial of all the filmmakers saying, you have the capability now. You have a phone and it shoots video and go shoot your movie. And it ends with Greta Gerwig, who's a Best Director nominee, saying, I need to see your movie. We all need to see your movie. Go make it. Like, that's the message. That's the takeaway to this is just like, technology is at a point now where we're all storytellers and this industry is starting to wake up to the fact that, we have to recognize different types of filmmakers from all different corners of the world and celebrate them. It's not just... what's made in the American system.
And but so that was the speech that I heard last night. Like, that message, I agree with you. If that had been in the speech, I would have said, well, that's one of the all-time great Oscar speeches. Like, that's going to be on the morning show. Like,
I should have won something.
I think what you should have. I think when all of us are watching the show, obviously we're watching because we love movies and we care about it, but we're also watching from the perspective of what's going to be cut out to be on our morning segment tomorrow morning on our news station.
Sure.
And when the show was over, I thought, what? I mean, okay, the Frances McDormand moment, I guess. Like, there really weren't a lot of great, holy
crap
moments.
She made all
moments.
The women stand up, all the
was great.
Nominees. That was
beautiful. A great moment.
I could have done without the maniacal laughter, but
after 4 hours, I was like, that was a great moment. Definitely. But at 3 hours and 47 minutes into the show, I'm like, I'm like, this is like going on way too long. And I love that she did that. And had that happen maybe an hour one or hour two, it would have given the show a little bit of a jump start. And it needed, the show was on like life support until they got back to those like major awards. And yeah, The Shape of Water, listen, I think it's a great film. But looking back on this year, films that spoke to the time, like Get Out, like Jake was just saying, that was this year's movie, and it never ends up that way with the Academy. It never ends up that way.
All right, well, let's celebrate some of the things that they got right last night. What win were you guys happiest about?
Deakins.
Jake, go ahead. Talk about Roger Deakins winning his cinematography Oscar
it's
for
just,
the first
you know,
time.
I know we talked a lot about Oldman's Oscar being a career Oscar and but Deakins' Oscar won. Yeah, it was a career. But was it a career Oscar? Because he could have got his career Oscar on his 8th nomination or his 10th nomination. He truly deserved it. I do think it was the most beautiful film shot in 2017. Blade Runner 2049 was just an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous film. And he's deserved it for a long time. And it was just one of those dude, you're past the point where you should have won a career Oscar. Now it's going to be an injustice if you don't. I mean, we're talking about probably the greatest cinematographer since Conrad L. Hall. I mean, we're just a guy that maybe Inyo Reid too. But I mean, a guy that is a genius at some of his great work, and hopefully the attention that he got for not winning will drive the average moviegoer to go back and go. I mean, I was talking to my co-anchor on the morning show. And I sort of had to kind of walk her through who this guy was and what he had done. And the average person hasn't seen The Assassination of Jesse James, but I go, okay, that iconic moment in Shawshank where Tim Robbins is in the rain, shirtless and holding. I was like, that's one of the most iconic scenes. He shot that and didn't win for that. And she goes, of course I know that scene. I'm like, yeah, he's shot that. I mean, every great you know, a Coen Brothers movie. There's a good chance he shot that. So it made me nice to see. It made me feel good, you know, to know that. And also, he knows the people I think were really rooting for him, and that's a cool feeling too.
Kevin, did you have a favorite win?
Yeah, I mean, Deakins was definitely a highlight because I love his work. And, you know, we've discussed on the show a million times just about, like, digital and stuff like that. But I was very happy to see him win. I think that, yeah, he's arguably one of the greatest cinematographers of all time. Jesse James and Shawshank and everything he's done with the Coen Brothers, as Jake was mentioning, is just brilliant. I mean, he's incredible. And it was just it was one of those things where I kind of put my mindset aside of the idea of the hypocritical element of them giving a career award, and I was like, yeah, this is beyond that, as Jake mentioned. I think the happiest I was probably for Jordan Peele, because that screenplay. Cool, the screenplay is just it's a perfect screenplay. It's like literally a masterclass in writing. I recently watched the Get Out commentary on the Blu-ray. I'm kind of halfway through it now.
Oh, cool. How is that?
It is so, oh my God, it's fascinating. He walks you through every single shot, why he made the decision to do it this way. But I just can't imagine, like, to me, I think the beauty of Get Out is the restraint of the movie. And what I mean by that is the first time you watch it, he's not waving in front of you the best parts of the movie. He's literally keeping the best parts of the film back, and you have to find them. And in this day and age, no one's watching movies more than once. I mean, like, we all do, but like the average person doesn't even have time to go to the movies, or they'll watch a movie once or watch it at home. Their kids are screaming that they get up and like leave and not paying attention to what's going on. But to the idea to risk that and actually think to yourself, okay, people are going to have to see this a couple times so they can truly see what I put into it. That's amazing. I wouldn't have have that ability to restrain myself. If I had something that brilliant in my mind and I wanted to like get it out there, no pun intended, I would literally, I would put everything in the forefront, and which is the dumbest thing to do. And I think that's, I mean, I want to be a filmmaker one day. It's like always been my goal. So like, I learned a lot from just listening to him speak about that and keeping that restraint. Well, it's amazing.
Okay. And so to that end, like I was going to say Jordan also, and so I'll keep it short. But what I love about that is that Jordan Peele winning, he's been talking about, and then all morning people have been sharing clips today about like Key and Peele skits, and it's just hysterical that this guy, it would be like, you know, if Jim Carrey in the height of In Living Color won an Oscar for the first movie that he ever directed. You know, people just didn't think of Jordan Peele that way.
It's but, amazing.
So then he gives interviews today and he talks about how Whoopi Goldberg winning for Ghost inspired him in a way, you know, that he was like, oh, I could possibly do that, you know? And so I know that there's a generation of kids that maybe they didn't watch the Oscars, right? They didn't watch the telecast, but they saw Jordan's speech today on some form of social media, and maybe they become the next Ryan Coogler, you know, or the next Ava DuVernay. And they just now believe like, oh my gosh, I could do this. Why can't I do this? And I think that him saying in his speech, like, I walked away from this script 20 times because I just figured I can't crack it. You know, like, no one's going to want to watch this movie. And instead he stuck with it and he figured it out and delivered this film, and it got the recognition that it did. And that to me is all of the winners, not all of them, but a majority of the winners are people who Del Toro, and Jordan, and even Deakins to a certain extent, they're persistent. They just stay with it. They stay with it. And I saw so many people rewarded last night for overnight success and for long-term success. Oldman, who we all say should have won 10 times prior to this, you know, to finally see him get his Oscar. We now live in a world, thanks to last night's telecast, where Roger Deakins is an Oscar winner, Gary Oldman's an Oscar winner, and Jordan Peele's an Oscar winner. And Guillermo del Toro is an Oscar
Rockwell.
Winner. Sam Rockwell is an Oscar winner.
But and we also live in a world
still
where
put stock in this.
We also live in a world where Kobe Bryant has one Oscar and Christopher Nolan has zero. That's also another world we live in. So
that's the reality.
Like, I mean, you have to get that. I mean, Kobe Bryant has won. I mean, this is a John Stewart bit from years ago, but when 3-6 Mafia won and Scorsese didn't have any Oscars at the time, but legitimately, no, I'll never forget that.
It was one of the best all-time Oscar lines.
Hands down. Like, and it was brutally true. That was the beauty of it. Because, listen, the 3-6 Mafia song was great, deserved the award for sure. The fact that they won an Oscar before Martin Scorsese was insanity. Like, it was just very, very funny. And I'm not saying that 3-6 Mafia song wasn't a good song, but what Scorsese had given to cinema prior to that date of that Oscar, it was just funny to me that he had nothing. And then last night with Kobe Bryant winning, it's like, Nolan has nothing. It's like crazy to me. I don't know. But, you know, Nolan joins a long list of famous filmmakers who never won, so it's fine. I think he's in good company with Kubrick and Wells and all those guys and Howard Hawks. And
You can make one change to next year's telecast. Do you shorten the show? Do you move the show earlier in the calendar year? Or do you do something else to help change it drastically?
First two
for
sure.
Pick one?
Yeah, one. What's the one change? What's the one change?
I say you shorten it.
I think you do it in 2 hours.
2 hours? But then you have to get rid of a lot. Do you know what? I enjoyed every original song performance last night. I loved them. I loved the big ticket performances. I thought the Coco song was beautiful. I thought the songs were great. But they have to go.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The beginning of Coco was so bad. That why was he was completely
he was
off,
so
key.
Out of key?
What was up with that?
I think there's something wrong with the audio because I thought everyone sounded bad, and those are incredibly talented artists that were up there singing. And if I argue, if the freaking
the
Oscars
girl
can't
from
get the
Greatest Showman sounded bad.
Yeah, she did sound bad. And Rin and I, my fiance and I, we were watching, going, we were so excited about her. There's a reason they saved her for last because I think people were excited about seeing the Greatest Showman perform. But everyone sounded bad. So if the Oscars, if Dolby Theater can't get the audio right, then cut it. Because like it's
she
just
was like screaming. She was like scream singing.
Yeah. And obviously we all know, like, I mean, Kevin, you saw her perform live in front of you. You know,
so did Sean.
Sing.
Yeah. She's an amazing singer.
Like, you guys were both there. Like you saw
her. She's amazing. Yep.
That's the best thing that came out of that movie.
Like, it's not her.
By the way, did you guys
shorten? They got to shorten the show.
Have you guys read the box office success of that film? It's like this, like, juggernaut.
I report on it every Monday. It's one of the leggiest films of all time, up there with Titanic.
Wow. It's amazing how much money that, because when it came out, it was considered to be almost a failure because it didn't open
well. It was a bomb when it came out. $8 million opening weekend.
It's amazing.
Well,
I'm so
because
happy.
I think that they really thought that that was going to be an awards contender. And then when they realized it wouldn't be an awards contender necessarily, they felt discouraged, but they never put their eggs in the basket of, oh, maybe we'll be a crowd pleaser and make a ton of money. And
the
you know
problem
what?
With
if
that.
Not for Last Jedi, the spotlight would be on that movie and Jumanji, because both of those movies have been crushing for weeks. Yeah.
Though honestly, you know, I do a box office report every Monday for our morning show. I've been saying the words Greatest Showman and Jumanji more than I've been saying Last Jedi. And maybe it's just because people expected Star Wars to do well, but the numbers that Jumanji and Greatest Showman were pulling in, to me, are far more impressive than anything Last Jedi did.
Right. Okay, so we have to wrap up this conversation because Kevin's got to run to Pacific Rim 2.
War ready.
And so we will review that on an upcoming show. But we have some very huge news. This is our last show as awards blend. Yes, we are putting a nail in the coffin of awards blend. And starting next week, you will be able to follow us on our new same podcast under the name Real Blend. So we're going to broaden our horizons and talk about all things cinema. And it's real, like R-E-E-L, because we're clever that way.
I love
way.
That.
We're the first ones ever do that.
And we get more downloads than the Oscar telecast. We get more downloads than the Oscars had ratings last year.
Significantly shorter.
Not hard to do. Not hard to do at all. So we will have a snazzy new logo, and we're going to be on all the same channels. You can find us on the same iTunes page. You can find us on our Spotify page, which we are on. We're going to be back on Cinema Blend's Facebook page live next week. We can still have to pick a date. Kevin, take a look at your calendar. We got to pick a day for next week. But we'll be back talking about probably Tomb Raider and probably Pacific Rim and maybe some Wrinkle in Time conversations, because the podcast in general is going to continue. We're going to veer away from awards, but we're going to get into everything cinema and just keep sharing all of our adventures from the junket road and the celebrity interviews that we get to do and just all the fun stuff that make the three of us so enjoyable.
Yeah, I think I'm excited about the movie review aspect of it. I'm excited about like opening the show now every week, and you know, we'll get away from the awards stuff, obviously, and we'll just kind of jump right into the big movies. So like, you know, Wrinkle in Time, as we mentioned, and things like that, we'll get into all those reviews. That's kind of what I'm excited about. Like, now we get to kind of play with new material and kind of move on from this aspect of it. And like, I guess the beauty of the show is that as it continues throughout the year, we can also blend in we can blend in like what we think maybe gonna be nominated for the following year kind of thing. So it'll all work out.
And we'll never stop talking about Dunkirk. Like, that'll still be a segment each week. Like,
I'm surprised we didn't vote on Dunkirk when.
We did. Well, it was in the running for a little while. Oh. So, okay. So, listeners can find us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. Please head over to our iTunes page. Give us a rating. Give us a review. We would love that. You can head to our Spotify page and subscribe to us there. And again, we will be on Cinema Blends Facebook page sometime live next week. We'll pick a day. We'll let you know on our socials. Kevin has one more thing he wants to say.
Can we do Kubrick Maybe? Blend?
No?
Can we do Kubrick Blend this week?
Ooh.
Man, that is a crazy one. Yes. Here, you heard it here now. We are going to do
good call.
Stanley Kubrick Blend. That's your homework. If everybody watches the latest. Revisit Stanley Kubrick's movies.
The latest.
And yeah, the latest. And then we'll talk to you guys next week. So thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you for our Oscars recap. Boys, talk to you next week. And thanks, everybody. Talk
Adios.
Dunkirk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.